Blog Talk Radio.
Talk is what we do. We call it When Black Men Talk. Welcome to it. I'm Mark Elliott. It's our forum, our opportunity to get together at least once a week. Three gentlemen, one in Illinois, one in Connecticut, and one in Ohio. And we share dialogue on love, relationships, and different factors of life. And what we force ourselves to do is a self-evaluation. And sometimes if they don't do it, I push them a little bit more just to make sure we get that out. But we like to share ourselves openly, and I try to make sure that we're not shying away from some things that need to be said. And we get together for 90 minutes once a week, and we open up and just talk just about a variety of things. Tonight's will be no different. And let me see here. I think I'm going to bring in a cat that we got our football picks going on. I wasn't going to say too much about this, but I guess why not? Go on, so we have a football picks going on, and this young man here happens to be in last place. And I just wanted to kind of see how he's feeling. Hope you're not feeling too bad. How are you feeling with the anyways?
I'm feeling good, man. I'm still a reigning champion. So I'm feeling good. Season's still too early. So I ain't scared.
You know, I will applaud you on maintaining your confidence in being in fourth place. I like that. I truly do like that. This is the reason I want to start off with. We haven't saluted anyone a period of time, and I want to salute this person here. Before I do, I want to get Mr. Charles in because, as you know, Mr. Charles is part of our football picks as well. And I have to see how he feels after that because Mr. Charles might be feeling a certain way, come to think about it, because even though his team won, they might have lost something that might hurt them throughout the season. Mr. Charles, welcome to the show. How are you feeling, sir?
Good. Self, brother. What's going on?
Hey, man, I'm feeling good, man. I'm feeling good. The usual. Let me just say that. I feel the usual, which is feeling good. And I guess you could time that by three. As I was getting ready to say earlier that we haven't saluted anyone in a while. We're going to start back with the salute. So this is a young lady I want to salute. It's California Assemblywoman Shirley Weber. She's creating a task force to recommend appropriate slavery reparations. The Governor Gavin signed a bill a little while ago to study and develop a proposal for potential reparations of descendants of enslaved people. Now, this is the first state to do such. I know last year, or maybe early this year, Danny Glover went to Congress and was trying to get it done nationally. But I like the idea that this state has taken the opportunity to step forward and kind of research it and see what's going on. So we salute Shirley Weber for leading the task. But at the same time, I wanted to talk about this a little bit because sometimes when we talk about reparations, our people get a little pessimistic. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be. But I think a lot of times we look at it and we go, you know, here we go again, nothing's going to happen. But I will say this, when I look around the country landscape, even here in Connecticut, and we have two casinos that's been knocking it down for the past, 20-some-odd years, and they're Indian-owned. And it came to them basically doing what they had to do to show that they owned the land at one point, and it worked out a deal with the state to where they'll give the state a little bit of money each month. But for the most part, it's their land. They put a casino up there, and it's been flourishing. Actually, those two casinos are beating out Las Vegas, knocking Las Vegas in the butt. So when I hear that or think of that, I'm thinking, okay, reparations shouldn't be that far off. So I'm going to come to you first, Mr. DeMarie, since you showed up first, and get your idea on what's going on in the state of California.
Well, I totally agree with it, and I've been on board with reparations since I learned about it very early on in high school and in college. And it's what should happen. When you look at African Americans, everybody else got a head start as far as economics. And we're still lagging behind. And we worked, some of our ancestors worked, or the most of them worked in this country for free. And so a debt needs to be paid to those who helped build this country to where it is today. And so I always felt that until that is reconciled, until the things that this government has done to the Native Americans is reconciled, and any other group that they wrong is reconciled, then there's not going to be any peace. There's always going to be a disparity in services and financial resources and things of that sort until you correct the wrong. And so, yeah, I'm glad that California stepped up and did this. I hope that others step up. And I wish that our people weren't pessimistic about it, because I can see where the pessimistic attitude comes from. It comes from all the broken treaties from the First Nations people, the Native Americans. It comes from all the broken promises that we were given, the 40 acres and the mule and all this other stuff. So I see it. And, you know, you see what's happening in with this government every day with social justice and police brutality and things of that sort. But what's right is right, and we need to keep pushing and fighting for what's ours.
Bring you on another, Mr. Charles. I want to get your opinion. But before I go to you, I just want to say I think that we should start to pay attention, and I think we should start to push the states that we live in. I mean, as California goes, some of the other states should start to follow, and I think we should start to push the state that we live in to do the same thing. Mr. Charles, your reaction, sir?
No, I do agree. I do think that it's necessary. It's something that is old. The debt is old. The question, of course, a lot of people have, particularly our folks, is will it be paid? But with California moving forward and showing some type of progress, it is somewhat of it's something that is positive towards it. And, you know, I heard D. Maurice talk about it, and he's right. He's right, and I'm not going to lie. Man, I mean, I'm glad that somebody's doing something that we need to push forward too. But it is if you want to put somebody in a downtrodden state, just keep pulling. It's like pulling the football, and you let them. They're not gonna let them kick it. Every time they walk up there, they're expecting something. All these broken promises, also too about the Native Americans. This country is famous for that, and a lot of our people have, as Mr. DeMarie said, have lost any hope at all. But that doesn't mean we need to stop. But it is very difficult when you keep taking the mails, man. And this is not something that just started with us. And quite frankly, I don't think a lot of people ever think it's going to happen. Not in their lifetime. That's just the honest truth.
Yeah, I can understand that. You two laid it out quite well. But we have to keep in mind that with faith, anything is possible. And also, there's been a bunch of us, let's be realistic, that never thought we'd see a black man walk around the White House and be called president. So things are possible. Things are definitely possible. Gentlemen, we're going to move on to a different topic. Before we do, I want to take us back to our childhood. I thought about this. I was driving one day, man, and a song popped in my head. And the song has such a strong significance for me, because it's a song that my father would play all the time. And wasn't much of a dancer, but he would play, and he would do a little jig to it. As a child, it always brought a smile to my face. And it was Sam and Dave. I believe that's the artist. Hold On, I'm Coming. Dun, 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 dun. Man, I remember, I think they were on Stax Records. I remember traveling to Memphis just to go to Stax Hall of Fame, man, just to kind of, I mean, they had some great music and kind of see the background. And it's interesting, a little history a bit about this song. They was actually recording another song, and one of the guys were in the bathroom, and they kept telling him to come on. And the guy was like, hold on, I'm coming. Yes, sir.
Come on, man.
I'm here to tell you,
really?
Bro. I'm here to tell you. That's how that song came about.
Really? That doesn't surprise me. It does surprise me. Another reason how they have what we do, our culture and what we say has been taken and made people a lot of money.
I tell you, bro. Think about that for a second. Mr. Charles, the song that your father used to groove to back in the day.
You know what's weird? I can't remember my dad really being in the music because he was always busy, right? But the one thing he did, he let me choose what I wanted to. And I think that's where he probably was like, oh, I can't believe this young boy's doing it. So the ones, I will say one song that he would listen to with me, because I remember buying my first 45, man. And it was James Brown. And it was The Big Payback. So I was rolling with that for a long time. The Big Payback. And it's just like, that song just says so lot, so much that it tells you that no matter what happens, to a point, you're going to get even. Don't worry about it. It's The Big Payback. Here I come. And that song has resonated with me. And my dad used to look at me and go, that boy's lost his mind early. So, yeah, we used to play that Big Payback by James Brown. So that's one of my favorites, along with my dad's.
That's a strong cut right there, The Big Payback. I could do dealing. Mr. Demarese, your song that I know your pop had, I know your pop, you know, well, so I know he had something that he put on. He used to wear that baseball cap. Yes, sir.
he had a number of songs he loves, and always music in the house when we were at home. We used to have this, I know some people had it, had a floor model stereo where it had the 8-track tape player. It had the phonograph player, record player, and it had a stereo in it. And it used to boom throughout the whole house. But I had to verify this today because I knew it, but I wanted to make sure. And I texted him. And when he texted me back, I just bust out laugh because I knew it. It's Teddy Pendergrass, Turn Out the Lights. Almost every day after work, he would turn that record on. I'll tell you, that record, when he bought that 45, it was black. Mm-hmm. He played that so much that the grooves and the record was white, bro. I'm telling you, he played that. And you could hear every time he put it on, my mom would say under her throat, oh, God. We were so sick of hearing it. Yeah, I mean, when he put it on, it just played and played and played. So he got tired of hearing it. And he never got tired of hearing it, bro. Boom, boom, boom. And you can hear it throughout the whole house, that big bass from that stereo. Boom, boom. And he put up that one finger and close his eye and turn out the light. It's just almost every day. That was his jam. He had a few of them, but that is the one. I mean, and I texted him back and I said, you played that record until it turned white. Literally turned white. You can hear the static. And there were sometimes years ago when that would come on the radio and I just had to turn it because I could not listen to one more note of Turn Out the Lights by Teddy Pendergrass. Today, I listened to it and laughed. It's a great song, but my pop wore that. When it came out, he wore that 45. He didn't buy much music, but when he bought it, he played the record until you got tired of hearing. I think I hit it a few times. So I wouldn't listen to it. And where my record? Where my record? And one of my little nutty sisters would find the record and give it to him. And then he put it right back on the record player, man. But Turn Out the Lights by Teddy Pendergrass, bro. That was easy.
Woo! Yeah, that's a cut, too. You know, it's interesting. I was listening to you about the record player that you had. We had something similar, but the only thing different in ours with ours was we had a TV with it as well. You had that big TV screen. It was really the combo.
In the middle?
It was, yeah, you lift up the top to play the music on the 8-track tape, but you close that top down and turn that TV on. That was it right there. That's when they made televisions, too, but of course it was black and white. Mr. Charles said something last week about we were speaking, and he was talking about the lady that gave, I guess, the woman that his father eventually married when he passed. She let him struggle to do with to bury his dad, and she came in at the last minute and came in with $200. But she was basically, to his death, receiving, I guess, some money from Social Security or something that he had in a retirement package, which was kind of interesting. And I know we talked about different stories before, but I wanted to go back and kind of revisit that again because I think we might have all had something happen in our lives that we looked at something a relative, a male relative, have done previous to us, and we just kind of took a vision of it and knew, okay, if I'm in that particular situation, I'm going to do different. And I've shared this before, but I want to go back and share it again. I remember years ago when I was a little boy, my mother and my sister, my baby sister, we went to this place. And they sell appliances. And I remember going there. We were looking around. I am sure I was looking for it, but I just kind of just remember it vaguely. But I think my mother went there to buy, let's say, a refrigerator. And when she got to the when she got to the register, or when she got to basically pay for it or whatever, she told me this later on when I grew older. But when she got there, the guy asked, okay, which house are you delivering this to? You want to be delivered to? So my father had an account there and, you know, had our address and account of another woman's address for the most part that he was buying stuff for as well. And so, you know, it's interesting how things happen in your life and then you kind of get the clarity about it. Your mind goes right back to it. Not that I was not thinking this way prior, but hearing that story, I always knew that I did not want to basically, you know, take money from a family that I'm in for my kids and put it someplace else where it's not necessarily supposed to go. And that's what I pulled from that. And even though when she told me, she didn't tell me not to do such, but just knowing it and knowing that day when I, you know, we were there flashing back to it, that really stuck in my head. So that's how I kind of handle that in a sense. Mr. Charles, I'm going to come to you because, you know, you developed this question, sir, without even knowing it. And that's what we do. Sometimes we take things that are put on the table and we chop it up a little finer. So if you have something you want to share, the floor is yours.
Yeah, primarily, if I would have had something, if I'd been in the situation, I would have done something differently. What I learned is I would have looked after the individual's child, right? Because I was quite young at the time. I think I was, actually, I was still in college. And if you know that you are receiving funds, that literally is taking care of you. The rest, I mean, you live well. You don't have to work. You might want to check in on that person, even if you don't give them everything, but just make sure they have a couple dollars. I think I would get $20 on my birthday, right? That was my pen. So I'm like, wow. But then again, I was mad for a little bit, actually for a while. I'm not going to lie. But then it didn't last like a year or anything, but I was quite upset because I just didn't think it was fair. But then again, I just thought about my dad. And I thought my dad was telling me, I told you, nobody's going to help you. Nobody's going to come for you. And he did. And then I had to come to grips with the fact that he made that choice for her. He told her he was going to take care of her the rest of her life. And he did. That's why he never divorced her. And she went on to say whatever. And, you know, but then the problem that I had with her, we had discussions later on. And she would talk about my father, what he did to her, how horrible he was to her at times. I said, I think he's still taking care of you. So what the hell are you complaining about? I think you're still getting a check. You know what I'm saying? I think you're still getting a check. So you might want to hold that down. If he was so bad to you, why don't you tell him you're good, you don't need that money anymore, and get a job? Anyway, so yeah, I would look after the children at least to make sure they were good, to make sure they didn't need anything, because particularly when you're set like that and being taken care of and you don't have to work, yeah, you might want to look after other people. I definitely would do that.
You want me? Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, yeah. We waiting on you, bro.
Yeah. I didn't hear Mark give me a cue, so I'm going to go with mine.
Sure. I'm sorry about that.
I wanted to travel the road less traveled, that I saw that males in my life or family hadn't traveled. And one of those things was to go to college, because I had different males in my family go to the armed forces. They got a job at factories or had a trade or something like that, or just hustled. But I rarely saw anybody, any males in my family going to college. So I wanted to go to college and university to expand my options and opportunities out there to see what I can be. And I think my father, I'm pretty sure, he was the one that really kind of pushed me in that direction, because ever since I can remember, people were asking me what I was going to do after high school, not going to college, even though I didn't know too much about it. I remember having a conversation with him, early in my high school career, and him saying that he didn't have a chance to go. He had a chance, but he forfeited, and he went into armed forces. And if he had it to do all over again, he probably went to university, because in his words, the armed forces is no place for a black man. And so he didn't want me to squander any opportunities. And if I wanted to go later, fine, but try college, try universities, and see if you can open up your possibilities. So when I looked at the landscape of both sides of my family, I saw a couple of folks who went and didn't finish, but I wanted to take my stab at it and see if I could finish and see, just kind of peek over the hill to see what else is out there before I settled on something that I wanted to do for a career or in my life.
Gentlemen, I am going to put this out there because, you know, we all feel a certain way about certain things. And what I've noticed, this sometimes kind of get under my skin. I'm not going to say it's a pet peeve, but it kind of bothers me a little bit. When people ask questions, they already should know the answer to. I'm going to give you an example. I was reading something the other day where this guy was, he was asking this columnist. He's been married for 24 years. And his wife fights not to have sex with him. So he was asking her, should he just move on? And here goes my statement. Asking questions that you already know the answer to. But behind that, to me, is that why is it sometimes when we're in situations where we know the answer, we really know what was up, what's going on, and the move we should make forward. But we seek out and ask others questions that we really should have the answer to, Mr. Maurice. Your response?
It always kind of bothered me, too. It just seems like a waste of time. And I think when folks kind of are really kind of asking those questions, they really they know the answer, but they don't want to face it. They don't want to face the realities of what's really going on. So they try to just kind of, you know, just keep asking those questions. Is it really true? Is it really, really, really true? But I think it's just a matter of folks not really trying to face reality. And I see it. One of my favorite shows is the Maury Povich show. And what always cracks me up with that show is that if the person's cheating, you found pictures, you got all this evidence. Why are you on the Maury Povich show trying to prove whether or not they're telling the truth or not? So, if you got all the evidence in front of you, obviously you don't want to face it. So, and it makes you look really stupid when you don't do that. And I understand, you know, you have feelings involved in it, but when you don't really kind of see it for face value, it often tells me that, you know, you just really don't want to face the truth.
Yeah, that's my particular spin on it, is that you don't really want to face what's in front of you. You truly, and a lot of times too, I think people ask because they want someone else to kind of tell them what to do. They don't want to make the decision on their own. They quietly want someone else to steer them in a direction where they should go. I know some people would say, well, they're just trying to get a second opinion. But realistically, it's your life to live. And I can give you all the opinions. Somebody can give you all the opinions all day, but you have to do what feels right in your heart and the direction you want to go. But it's just certain questions, here again, that are asked, Mr. Charles, that the answer is right in front of you. What's behind that?
Well, I do agree that some people want to make sure that they feel like they want to make sure they have a reason to make the decision. So it's like there's a little something to back it up. Some evidence. Somebody said, well, yeah, you should do this. Like, oh, yeah, well, since I said this, I think they're right. And it makes them feel more confident about the decision. But the other part, which is bizarre to me as well, is probably, in my experience, you ask somebody, maybe 65% of the time you ask somebody, they don't give you the answer you're looking for. So when you think about that, they don't give you the answer. So you're like, well, I was thinking this way, and then they said, well, I wouldn't do that. And you're like, wow. So that shows you that you need to do, as you mentioned, you need to stay with your initial reaction, your responses to what your decision is going to be and move forward. But, I think when you're not sure or people are just uncertain, then they look for others to validate whatever an answer may be, or sometimes even give them the answer that they're looking for. So they're not sure, or they don't want to make the decision.
Gentlemen, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to move in a little direction, but kind of stay in the same lane a little bit. I'm going to put a question out there. Content, but not happy. Can you stay? It's When Black Men Talk, Mr. DeMaurice, Mark Elliott, Mr. Charles. Talk from three gentlemen, one in Ohio, one in Connecticut, and one in Illinois. This is what we do. We call it When Black Men Talk. Mr. Charles, content but not happy. Can you stay, sir?
They call me Speedy Gonzalez for a reason, bro. No. I've been told that several times. I mean, you got to work it out, bro. Life is too short to be not happy. I'm sorry. Maybe that's from a man that has not had that experience of walking down that aisle. But at some point, I just think you have to at least try to be happy. Because otherwise, you just every day or every hour, whatever it is, the time that elapses, you just become more bitter. So, no sir.
I got a funny feeling I can answer this question from Mr. DeMaurice. Mr. DeMaurice, content but not happy. Can you stay?
And go on with your bad self. Go answer it for me. No, you can't. You can't. Yeah, you and I have had these conversations when we were married. That is just going to make you, just like Mr. Charles said, just bitter, frustrated. And that's one thing. That is the one primary thing when I was in that situation or I find myself in that situation. I think back to some of my uncles and older men in my family who were in marriages they didn't want to be in. They were miserable. They were miserable to everybody. You didn't do anything to them, but they were just miserable to you too. And I never wanted to be that way. I never wanted to be that way. And the thing I told my son and daughter when we discussed this is that I always want to be looked at as in my best self. I always want them to see the best of me, never the worst of me. And so if I would have stayed in that marriage, they would have seen the absolute worst in me. It would have been a bad example of, to look upon as a positive example or role model. And I just couldn't do it. It's a miserable place to be. And I know men right now that are in marriages that are friends of mine that are miserable, but they stay because of the kids and I always tell them, you got to make a choice, man. You got to make a choice. You can still be a father without being in this miserable state. And that was the message I got that pushed me over the edge to do what I did.
Yeah. It can present a tough situation, but I wonder, content not being happy. I'll answer first that I couldn't stay. Obviously, I couldn't stay. But I wonder because, like you said, Mr. Mason, we come across a lot of folk, cats that are, men and women, they're in their situations where they're not happy, and they find excuses to stay. Like they say it's the kids, and, I get that to an extent, but people find reasons to stay, and I think sometimes they're scared to venture on of the unknown. And, even though you're not happy, but you realize that what your day is going to be daily with this person. And you don't know what's out there. You fear taking that step to move on and what that day can bring. And it's interesting. The majority of the times, if you take that move, there's a bunch of happiness out there waiting for you. It's just a peacefulness and happiness that's waiting. But a lot of people get locked into not wanting to kind of step out. And I think, too, that with some people, it's been impressed upon that once you get involved, it should be a lifetime. You don't do anything. You just stay unless it's to an extent where there's some abuse going on or some nature outside of that. You're obligated to kind of be there. And I never kind of believed in that, but that was sold to a lot of people. And some folk realistically, just don't think they should be happy. They think happiness is afforded to some others, but part of their life is, you know, they're doing whatever they should be doing, and they don't think they deserve to be happy, and that's some deep stuff right there. But with that being said, I want to put this to you, Mr. DeMaurice. Is it possible to be true to oneself without losing oneself in relationship? And if it is, how is that obtained?
I think it's possible if you have a mate who is not trying to change you and who you are. In many instances, you get in relationships where people are trying to change you to who they want you to be. And when you're in relationships like that, you can't be yourself. You really can't be yourself, or you're sneaking off trying to be yourself with a whole new set of friends or people that understand who you are. But I think if you really get a mate who really appreciates who you are, what you're about, and not try to interfere with that, I think that it can be possible.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. Someone that understands and respects who you are and not trying to have you move to basically satisfy their personal needs and their personal gratification. And that's not always obtainable. But I remember saying this a long time ago, and I don't think she understood when I said this to her, you know, when I first got married. I said, you know, don't lose yourself, who you are. No, I'm not going to lose myself. And I wasn't saying it in a mean way, but I think with that being said, we should both be able to maintain who we are and grow. But I don't think it should have to come in. I mean, especially if you've done, with that being said, I will say this, especially if you know you've done some things you're trying to improve yourself. But if you're willing to compromise and work on some things, I don't think you should just have to lose yourself to be in a relationship. Mr. Charles, your response, sir?
Yeah, I think that's important because if you can remain and be true to who you are, then I think it helps the relationship to work through that. And then the other person has to realize that too. If there is somewhere, some concessions that you have to kind of come together on, it's like, okay, how can we make this better? Some people are so stuck into themselves that they don't realize that there's ways to kind of deal with things and still be yourself. Like, for instance, come in and just their way is the right way, is the only way, and they just have a certain thing because of the past relationships that they have. That's the only way that they know how to respond. But an individual of intellect and somebody that has more experience in relationships understands that I can still be myself and still work this out because we have an issue. And to me, that's what marriage is about anyway. Working things out and still staying true to who you are.
Now, coming right back to you with this one, Mr. Charles. Alone, but not lonely. Is that a possible thing?
Hell yeah, anyway. Hell yeah. And only do I say that, I don't mean to say with such conviction, but it's real. Because I was the only child growing up for the most part. So that's not an issue for me because once I became accustomed to being by myself, the loneliness, there are moments, but then it doesn't last long because you become your own best friend, you become a home entertainment center, especially as an only child. But I understand why other people could have troubles with it because they're used to being around people all the time. So I definitely get that other side of it too. That just, unfortunately, just wasn't my experience.
Yeah. Well, I grew up with two brothers and two sisters, and it's interesting when I stop and think about it, there's a lot of times that I seeked out to be alone. And it's interesting, I said that because my oldest brother, two older brothers, they kind of went off and did their own thing. And certain things I might have been in as a child, they just wasn't into, like watching wrestling. You know, I was happy to have the TV to myself and watch wrestling. Even if the TV was faded, I couldn't even see all of it. I was happy to have it. And there's times when I was just happy to have that things just to myself. And as I grew up and I grew older, there was always a feeling of comfortability just being by myself, not needing necessarily company to be pleasing or to be talking to. Now, I enjoy company, don't get me wrong, but if I'm alone, I'm good. I mean, if that's there. And I think, you know, it's tough. I've known and seen loneliness is, or being alone is not comfortable for a lot of folk. They just really can't. I've seen people get in bad situations based on that premise alone. they didn't want to be lonely. And they never took the time out just to understand that even when you are alone, those would be some best times in your life. Mr. DeMaurice, alone but not lonely, is it possible?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's possible. I think it's also possible when, you know, you're really comfortable with it. You're comfortable. You don't have to have people around to justify who you are, what you do, or to take up your time. So it's very, very possible. And I didn't do it all the time. And even in this stage in my journey, sometimes I'd rather have my alone time so I can read, listen to music, do the things that make me more creative, learning things, either watching movies or sports or writing. It requires a lot of alone time to do that, because if you don't have that time alone to kind of think things through and to really kind of contemplate things and plan things and kind of work things out, you know, you get to a point where you're trying to, I know for me, I try to help entertain people when they're around me, or I'm doing things that make them happy and not necessarily anything for me. So it could be a dangerous spot when you get to a point where you're sacrificing yourself for everybody, but you're not really taking care of yourself.
This is something that I came across, and I wanted to kind of, I was debating about putting it out there, but I think it's needed to kind of go out there, because I think sometimes as black men, we kind of go into avenues that we shouldn't go into, in a sense, and we kind of speak sometimes without really kind of thinking. And there's a cat, I think, there's such. As we know, the debate took place, the vice presidential debate took place a few nights ago. So I guess what I was going on, this actor, his name is Lakeith Stanfield. He's been in a few things. He used to be in a show, Atlanta, that was on a little while ago. He came out, I guess he tweeted or did something during last year's debate, during the debate a few nights ago, about Kamala Harris' hair, that she needed to do something about her hair. And, you know, when I came across the story, the reason why I just chose to kind of go with it, because I think men, black men I'm speaking to in general, that we put too much pressure on sisters about their hair. We really do. And we look at it, we want certain things done, whatever the case may be. And that's a lot of pressure to put them under. Let me say that first. But in this case here, to understand the magnitude of what she's up against and what she's doing and what she's achieving and what's probably going to be in front of her, to sit in front of a TV and that's the best thing you can notice, not even watch a debate, I had no interest in it. But I remember a few years ago, and I'm sure you two will recall this, when I think her name was Simone, was doing the Olympics. And on a nightly basis, yes, on a nightly basis, black people picked on that young woman about her hair. Just tore to shreds. They didn't forget the fact that she was winning gold, that she spent a good portion of her life to train to be there. But we were ignorant enough to sit around and talk about this young lady's hair. And the same statement with this cat here, that's ignorance, bro. Realistically. I mean, when are we going to start to understand women are more than just hair, they're more than just breast and ass, realistically? And it's like we always expect them to basically show up just for our approval, for our recognition. And half the time, this fellow looks like shit. Google him and look at him. Realistically, he looks like shit half the times. But somewhere he thinks he has the right to kind of basically speak on it. I don't care if you're for her or not, you want to vote for her or not. But I think as men, we've got to be smarter and do better than that. So I'll get your reaction to it first, Mr. DeMaurice.
Well, hopefully Mr. Charles will correct me with this quote with Chuck D from Public Enemy. I believe that the lyrics go, hate against hate, that's why we gangbanging. We hate each other. We hate when we look at each other, we see ourselves. We've been taught to do that. And so I'm not surprised that somebody would come out to try to distract from what's really going on and quote unquote trying to stay woke and trying to distract folks, some of the clowns on social media, to just focus on their hair instead of focusing on whether or not this person is a viable person to lead your country. Because quiet as it's kept, folks are just talking about this election. I'm looking at 2024. Those two might be in the runnings in 2024. So I want to hear how they present themselves, because that may be that woman that you're teasing her about her hair may be the next president of the United States. If something happens to Joe, something happens to 45, those two will step up in line. And so I want to see, instead of looking at their appearance and all that other stuff, I want to see and I want to hear what they're saying. And it's sad, it's really sad and childish to sit there and pick at what somebody's hair looked like, where there are bigger things at stake here. And so I truly ignore folks when they're really kind of going after folks' physical appearance. That tells me that person's not mature enough to handle life on life's terms. And so they will pick and do anything to distract or to take the attention off of what's really important and make it so trivial that it, and then we have, you know, dumbasses who will follow that and lose the whole point of why that debate was even taking place. It wasn't just to go over, because most of us know who we're going to vote for, except the idiot independents and folks who are undecided. I don't know what more you need to see. But anyway, you know, you got to look at what's at stake, and it's not going to affect you next month or next couple of months, next year. These things affect you 2, 3, 4 years down the line. When the clown was elected, it affected what we're going through now. He did not prepare, do anything. So you got to start thinking long term and long range. But I think on social media, it's so short term and it's so on the dime. Everything is out there just like that. It doesn't give enough people who really don't really take the time to think enough space to kind of think about what they're saying and how they're reacting to it and what decisions they need to make for the long term. It's just, you almost want to take folks like that and like Deacon Jones said, put them in a bag, take a baseball bat and just beat the hell out of them. Because while you're joking around, they're making decisions that are crippling this country. And if that's the best you can come up with in your commentary of where your children are, where your people are, all that, I don't need to listen to you. I don't even need you to be around. I'm even upset that you even brought this question to the panel, because this dude, he doesn't deserve our time on this particular topic, truthfully.
Well, I bring it, and I understand you feeling that way, but I bring it because, bro, there's many of them.
Yeah,
he was just dumb
too many
enough
of them.
He's many of them. Yeah, and he was just dumb enough to kind of put out there, and he probably didn't think it was going to go the way it went. So it's like, you know, we and a lot of times we need to kind of lambast our own when they do something that's stupid or say something that's stupid, because we should be keeping our own and we should be correcting our own. So that's part of the reason why
keeping
I'm
keeping
an
eye on the ball.
Mr. Charles, what I found interesting too is that a lot of folk made, and I know it's light. I understand it's light, but you have more people talking about the fly on that gentleman's head than about what she talked about. They took a whole debate and was ready to more laugh and joke about what the fly doing, whatever the case may be, and I'm just like, wow. That's where we live now. That's where we are. Mr. Charles, your response to this gentleman talking about Kamala Harris here.
Well, I consider him and others that focus on things like that, particularly your hair, as simpletons, right? And, you know, people say, well, you try to act some kind of way because you're educated, you've done this and that. I say, no, I understand it from the bottom. I understand it from who we are as people. When people that are struggling and may not have the most education, I understand it, but that doesn't mean you need to be a simpleton, right? We use things as things that we say we're not allowed to, they're not made available to us as excuses for us not understanding and learning and educating ourselves. I understand that. But to just come up and, as you said, talk about her hair, the way her hair was, I wouldn't give a damn what her hair was. And she had one braid and one thing was whatever off, was coming out crazy. The point is does she have the correct credentials, the proper credentials to lead this country and do better for people in general? That's what I care about. It's the same thing, too, where everybody talking now, and everybody thinks it's a joke, and it doesn't matter because it's sports. It doesn't matter. But from the basis of what we look at it, people talking about Jimmy Butler and his hair. Who gives a damn? He can play. I don't care. The same thing Kevin Durant. We are so caught up on visual beauties and everything, and as if that's going to get you somewhere. That is, to me, it's really appalling. I'm with D. Marisa on this. It's appalling. And what's really sad about this whole situation is, as you said, we got to take care of our own and try to educate our own. But the root thing is this. We don't understand that in this world of social media, you know, this reality TV life that we live in, we do not understand what's being done. A lot of us don't. There's a reason why this is happening. For those that don't pay attention early enough, we're running out of time. You guys, the election is getting closer. The time is coming up on us. For those who are last-minute people, try to grab information. So let's say you really want to get some information from the debate. Okay, that might be your only time to hear from these people. And now everything is muddled because of the coronavirus and a bunch of other stuff, and now you're going to get your other $1,200 check. What the hell do you think? People are so damn confused right now, I bet, because they didn't take time to really study and learn more about what the situation is. Because as Mr. DeMarie said, this is the next damn 8 years as I leave this point. Those will be the same people that will be complaining, talking about they ain't taking care of the white man doing it. It's always some bullshit, man. It's like the squirrel in the damn nuts. You know, when it's coming, you should store some nuts. Instead, you out here looking crazy, talking about woe is me. Anyway, I'm sorry. I could go home forever with that. Damn.
I just thought of this while you were talking, Mr. Charles. It's interesting because if you ever really kind of look at the numbers that are afforded, in a sense where we're always, when it comes down to unemployment, you know, we're always leading the numbers of unemployment. But for some reason, no matter how many times we're leading numbers of unemployment, what the case may be, we're not making enough compared to other races, whatever. We find a way, as a race of people, to spend more money on hair care products. We find a way to spend more money. There's no secret when you find these nail salons and all the stuff in our communities, because we'll outspend any race when it comes down to try to walk around looking what we deem as being beautiful. And it's sad. I mean, it's really sad. But when you have idiots like that saying things and showing, that's where the focus is. That's the focus. It's really interesting, but that's the focus. Turning the wheel just a little bit, the pursuit to be happy. And you were talking earlier about, or we were speaking earlier about being content but not happy and not staying. And I think sometimes we have to realize happiness just doesn't happen because you just wake up. We're all thankful to wake up in the morning, but that doesn't mean happiness kind of just presents itself to you and come to your door and go, hey, I'm here, grab me, and let's go outside and do what we have to do. It has to be something, I believe, over a period of time and daily that you work on with your brain, and you must utilize your brain as a muscle to achieve such. So happiness should reside at all times. Even when things aren't going that well, I believe it should reside in our mind and be there. But with that being said, I want to come to you first, Mr. Charles, with this. How does one basically wake up to the idea of being happy and find a way to continue it throughout the course of the day?
I would say you have to understand who you are at your core, right? You have to understand who you are and what makes you tick, what makes you why are you thankful? Besides the Lord wakes you up every morning, what makes you tick? What gives you satisfaction? What makes you go, okay, that happened to me, but I can continue to move on? When you understand out who you truly are and accept things and not worry about so much about what other people say or what they deal with or think, when you understand yourself to that point, you can always find happiness. Some people don't know how to do that. They don't because they've been used to other people telling them what to do all the time. But if you find out who you are at that core, and you can have that happiness, we all like different things. We all like have other things that relax us. We also have things that help us relieve stress. That's where you have to find out who you are at the core. And you find it out. There's not too many things that can deter you from having the happiness that you're looking to achieve.
I am. I'm always happy to do what we do, gentlemen, and this is the reason why. Part of the reason why is because we take things and we just bring it to light. I mean, that answer alone, man, is it, bro. We take things that it may sound simple when it's said, but when you really think about it, it's not as simple as you may think. And I like the fact how we handle things and how we discuss things here on Black Men Talk. D. Maurice, you know, how does one wake up to the idea of being happy and continue it all day long?
Well, I think we need to realize that happiness is elusive. It's not something that you could just hold on your hand and hold on tight and keep it. But the way you can keep it is you can make a choice to be happy. Regardless of the situation, regardless of life circumstances, you can make that choice when you wake up. You can make that choice when unfortunate things happen that you are going to be happy. And then follow through with doing things that make you happy or bring joy to your life, no matter what the circumstances are. So, yeah, a lot of people think that once you get to become happy and you grab happiness, that it's like something that you can hold like a bottle or an object, and you keep it and you protect it and nobody can get to it. But no, it's elusive. It's like water almost. Like it'll run through your hands. You'll get to enjoy it. Sometimes you go without it for a while. But if you make a choice within yourself saying, regardless of all this and regardless of all my circumstances, I'm going to be happy, then that's who you will be. That's who you will be. You're going to be positive. You're going to be happy. You're going to be grateful for what you have and move on. And so, but I think people forget about their choice in the matter of being happy or not.
I think also a lot of times we associate finances, money, with a level of happiness, that money will kind of make you happy. Materialistic things, too, we kind of believe if we obtain such and do things, and we kind of wait sometimes to get to those things and fight to get those things and think that's going to bring forth happiness. And that's not necessarily true. And I think we choose to see things in a positive or negative manner. I think a lot of times, based on some things that may happen in our lives that we haven't let go, our reflection will come out in a negative manner, which there goes your happiness. So in essence, is the way we train our brains to respond in certain ways every single day. And here again, going back to the brain being a muscle, it must be trained and utilized to basically honor positivity and happiness, you know, and kind of find out when you are kind of taking that negative trail to kind of remove those thoughts from your mind and go forward in a positive manner. This is something that's interesting because I know we were all probably told this as youth, but it's really interesting and something that does play a part in your happiness, whether you want to kind of believe so or not. The people that you keep company with can have a huge influence on the way you maintain your happiness. And I'm going to pull back on this one and come to you with this one, Mr. DeMaurice. The people that you choose to keep company with can be a big influence. And, you know, you maintain some happiness, sir.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I tend to try to stay away from negative people and folks who can talk the talk but can't walk the walk, and folks that aren't really productive or don't want to better themselves or are not aware of what's going on, socially, politically, on a whole spectrum of things. And because if you do tend to hang around them, and I noticed that with myself, you tend to become like them. You tend to kind of say the same things that they're saying or take on some of the negativity that they're taking on. And you realize after a while, hopefully you'll realize after a while that, hey, this is not me. This is not who I want to be or where I want to be. So over the years, I have associates that I may spend some time with in passing. Hey, how you doing? This, that, the other, talk for a while. But as far as inviting them over or hanging out with them long periods of time, I had to cut my ties because I know, looking at them, I've known some of these folks for over 10 years, and they're still at the same spot they were 10 years ago. It's like nothing changed. It's like you went in a coma for 10 years, woke up, and they're still talking about the same things that you were talking about before you went in that coma. And so it stunts your growth being around folks like that. So I find it a must. I also think that life circumstances sometimes will force you to cut off ties with folks like that, especially if you're, I think we may have discussed this before, you're going through a bad time, and then you notice how people treat you during that bad time. Maybe that bad time was used to kind of purge away from some of the folks that have been holding you down or in that negative space that are keeping you in that negative space. So definitely, yeah, man, I'm a big proponent of cutting off ties with folks, family. It doesn't matter if you're negative and trying to bring me down. I'm not getting anything out of this, any positivity, any growth, any more connection, then okay, I can leave you alone. I can go my own way because I want to continue to grow and evolve as a human being.
I remember our grandmother used to say something years ago, and I'm probably not going to say it correctly, but she used to always say it to me. And when she first would say it to me, I had no idea what she was talking about. And I would ask her, Grandma, what you mean by that? And every time she would say thing, I think she called it parables, if I'm correct. She used to always throw a lot on that, man. If I didn't get it, I'd ask. She would just start laughing. And a lot of times she would answer, and a lot of times she wouldn't. She would just kind of leave it there with the laughter, left me to kind of figure out on my own. But she would always say this, in a sense. Now, you talked about family, but she would say that, Mr. Mark, if your right eye offends you, pluck it out. I'm like, Grandma, how am I going to see if I take my right eye out? And then she would wait another time. Go, if your left hand offends you, cut it off. And you're still sitting there like, okay, well, Grandma just trying to play with me. What's going on here? But as time went on in life, I started to see clearly what she meant. And like you said about family, it's if there's something that's offending you and it's not good for you, no matter where the root is, you have to cut it off. And you can't get locked into relationships with friends, families, whatever, where there's true no benefit for you or them in a sense, and try to continue it. You just have to walk away from it. You cut it off because it's just not doing you no good. Mr. Charles, your reaction, sir?
Yeah, I agree with that because sometimes when you are connecting with people, you might really need some solid opinions that you can really take to heart, and the person has to know what you're going through and respect you, and not try to be too tough. So they might be providing a very valuable service. So therefore, you have to be very careful with who you hang around or who you engage with, because some people are just negative, and that's all they've known their whole lives, and they're caught in stuck in ruts, as Mr. DeMarie said. I mean, like, for instance, you'll go out and say you want to buy a car, and you already have a car, and you're paying high interest rate on it because your credit sucks. But then you want to get a truck, and your credit sucks so bad, you got to go out and get another high interest loan on the truck, another on this truck, and you'll not pay for the first damn car. It has over 155,000 miles on it. What the hell? It's just that kind of not having that type of logical thinking that makes you go, how can I even connect with you? I can't even connect with you. And then even take it to a step further that you need to have people around you that help you grow and help you at least to the point where they understand where you're coming from. They don't have to be perfect people, but I think you have to be on the same wavelength and plane. And you mentioned about relatives. Woo! Holidays, man. Holidays. All I can say. Sometimes. Holidays. Leave that there.
An uncle of mine said this to me a long time ago, and it always just rung in my ear and in my spirit and my mind. He said that, Mark, throughout the course of your life, you're going to meet people. And he said, if you decide to spend time with them and be with them, he said their life should be better the mere fact that they got to know you in some form or fashion. And it's not that him saying that made me say, okay, anybody I'm going to be with, I got to make them better. But I think in essence, it said if I have something to offer, and it should be simple, whatever it is, I'm kind of contributing to making their life better. And I think that's what I've always seek for. If you're going to be spending time together, or I know you as a friend or whatever, it should be some value that we both kind of exchange and get to where our lives are better for knowing each other. Just not just basically draining each other, so to speak. Gentlemen, let's take a little short break. When we come back, we'll get questions from the panelists. I said this for years. I may not have said it recently, but you two are the strength and the fabric of what we do here. So it's no better than find out what you two are thinking. And we'll do that next on Black Man Talk. Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles, Mark. Charles, you started off with the questions for tonight, sir.
No doubt. I've been receiving, you guys probably have been receiving as well, notations or things about voting or the election or through your phone and everything like that. But getting back to the point of a lot of people of color, particularly people you might be connected with, they may not have a clue of who they're going to vote for. Or they may not have a clue as to how to get, you see, how to receive information that might be vital for them to making their mind up and making a solid decision. So with all that being said, and we are literally less than about, 3.5 weeks from the election, how, if somebody came to you, how would you go about telling them how they should go about receiving information so they can make a quality decision on voting? I know that's a lot, but anyway.
No, that's not a lot, man. I just chuckled at this because I think people make voting out to be way too big of a deal. And I say this to say this, that at this stage in the game, I guess I'm old-fashioned. As Charles said, I was old last week, and to a degree, I guess I am. And sometimes I'm old-fashioned. For most of my adult life, I've been going to pull the ballot or whatever. I've been doing it to where I've gotten letters thanking me from the city I lived in for doing it, always being a voter, whatever the case may be, and that feels good. So I said to say this, is that how as anyone, I'm going to say for the most part, I'll give you over age 25. You're just waking up to the idea of what's going on, voting, what you need to do, whatever the case may be. It's 3 weeks away. It's not like Mickey Mouse, SpongeBob, and all these. It's an array of people that's voting. I mean, it's up to vote for. It's not. You should have an idea where you are right now. Nothing has to come to your phone, tell you to go register, all this stuff. Either you're in it or you're not. But if you're not at this point equipped with what the hell is going on, I don't know what to tell you. I just don't. I mean, I was asked the other day, and I was getting my teeth worked on, and the lady said to me, Are you saying you're balancing? Are you balloting? Are you going to go vote? I said, I've been doing this all my life. I'm going in. I'm masking up, and I'm going in. I'm not sitting no damn ballot in. I'll be honest, I'm not. I'm not giving no one an opportunity to take my vote and move it somewhere else. And I'm not saying that's going to happen, but that's just what I believe in. So I don't believe in spending a lot of time trying to educate people about voting, because it's a simple given right that our people fought for us to have. So I don't believe it's in my nature or part of me to kind of bring you up to speed or say this, whatever the case may be. Make a damn decision to do something. If you choose not to, that's good too. But I think it's amazing. I get young people that move into the age of 18, 20, they should be equipped. And I'm not knocking them. You know, I saw this, and you sent this out, Mr. Demas, a while ago. Shaq voting for the first time. Huh? Who? Why now? You know, nobody wants to say it because it's Shaquille O'Neal, but what makes you vote now, Shaq? Oh, the other elections weren't worthy of your time to go vote? There was a cat at work one day, about a week ago. I'm 57. This cat's got to be about 60, just about 60. We're sitting in a room, and he said to anybody getting the ballot, the missing Western ballot to vote? He said, they've been sending me stuff in the mail, but he said, I'm not a registered voter. And a white guy said to him, you're not a what? I'm not a registered voter. I'm not sure what's going on. Then shut up. I mean, really. And the guy asked him again, he said, I can't believe you're not a registered voter. So here, but I find that to be interesting. You've been out of the game all these years. Now you want us to educate you what you should do. Go somewhere and sit down. Your response, Dean Maurice.
I was talking to a group yesterday about this because they were asking me questions about, I think the question was how people who don't want to vote or saying that their vote doesn't count, what would you say to them? So we went through a number of things, and what I said, how would I address that person? I think what happens is in this society, man, folks are getting so distracted with everything that's so trivial that when the important things come up, they think it's trivial too. And it's really sad that folks are, and it's done by the design. Of course, it's done by design because that's why 46 million didn't vote in the last election, presidential election. It was designed that way. And so, I try to, if folks are sincere in asking me, I tell them about, why I do it. It's for my ancestors. It's for my voice. And it just doesn't stop with the vote. I can protest. I can go against policies. I can write, and I can go visit any person in political office. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be vigilant and aggressive in this, because if you don't, people don't hear what your views and what your concerns are in your community. And so if people are sincere about doing that, I'm good with it. You kind of stole the thunder of my question with Shaquille O'Neal, because that was going to be my question. But I'll save it for a little while, and I'll save my response for him in a little while. But that's my response to that. Just to me, if folks are asking, I tell them. And it was really kind of refreshing to have a group of students who are asking. And some of them are much younger than me, and some of them aren't. And they're, some of them are in that situation where they're kind of, okay, what do I do here? Here's the outlet. I just got a text message from a group that I've been working with all weekend and telling them, listen, avoid Fox News. That is not the place you should be getting information from when you're making political decisions, because that's Trump's platform. So you don't want to look at that. Here are other sources to look at to get the information that you're trying to get instead of propaganda. And so this is a group that some of them weren't born here, and they're searching for stuff, but they get sidetracked with a lot of the propaganda and misinformation. So I think it's important that we do try to educate folks and give them a different perspective, so they won't continue to still be misinformed.
You'd be misinformed if he gets reelected again. Trust me. You will be misinformed. Your response, Mr. Charles.
Yeah, I try to do what I can if they're interested, as Dean Maurice said, if they're trying to look for information. I mean, I don't have to be a history teacher or anything like that, but if they really have some legitimate questions, I do what I can. But I think that we don't understand, or we don't see, or we don't care about of what's going on. And what I mean by that is the fact that we just mentioned early on about people talking about Ms. Harris's hair. You understand what I'm saying? It's the same way why people were so worried about what 45 says in his Twitter. You missed the whole damn point. What else is happening with the rest of the world? Oh, you said what he said on Twitter? How about paying attention to the other two factors? So you'll know when he says something that's outlandish, it doesn't mean anything really. And then you got to come back, and he's going to have to apologize. Same way with the crap with the what's going on with him talking about he wasn't going to move forward with the stimulus bill for the people and with the Congress and everything and the Democrats. He said he shut it down before the after the election. And then, of course, the damn stock market drops 500 points. Then all of a sudden, well, we're back in negotiations. Pay attention, man. This stuff is more prevalent than more people think. We got a lot of lost people worrying about, as you mentioned, about getting their hair damn done instead of worried about making some quality decisions and being informed.
I'm glad you brought that point about the stock market, because realistically, I don't think as a nation, as people, we don't realize a lot of decisions are made so folks can make money. It's just the bottom line. A lot of decisions are made so there's a group of people in this country that can make money. And you have to start to see sometimes. And realistically, you have to start to just think. You have common sense. You know, so, you know, I hear what you say about not getting it from Fox, and that is what's happening. But you should know Fox by now. Here again, if you're older than 25, you should have an idea that Fox is slated more towards him. And CNN is more slated towards liberals and the Democrats. You know, so, you know, you pick your poison for whatever. But at some point, there's a little homework involved. And that's something about education, because there's enough information out there to do your own work. So I just find it here again. I find it funny, comical, that 3 weeks in, you haven't really been paying attention. And you don't know where to go. I don't care what country you come from. If you choose to be American, you should start paying attention and be on top of stuff. Just my opinion. Your question, Mr. Maurice.
Yeah, I sent you all that email about Shaquille O'Neal, and it was sent to me by a buddy who sends me a lot of different stories. He's an attorney, and we're close friends, and he always tries to keep me in the loop of what he's reading and what he thinks is interesting and what we should be paying attention to. But I know I felt some kind of way when I first heard this. I wanted to get your thoughts on it. You too.
You know, I've been saying this for a while, man. I don't know if we have a disconnect from our ancestors, and a lot of us probably do. And it might be, you know, I'll stick with Shaquille O'Neal. It must be tough to stay connected to black folk that came before you when everyone, for the most part, that's around you are white. They're paying you a lot of money to do basically. We know, we see him on TNT. We know how his career went. I talked about this on the sports show a few days ago. Shaquille O'Neal was nothing great to NBA. He was just a big blob of guy that just slammed the ball in, what the case may be. He didn't work on his game. He didn't improve his game. He did nothing. He won a lot of championships. But his talent wasn't great because of who he is, his size, and, you know, and he has this chemistry about him. He's always been loved by the masses. But I think just like him and a lot of black folks, we disconnect ourselves from our ancestors. We act like they don't exist, like they did nothing for us, like we don't stand on their shoulders, like they have nothing for us. And I say that because if you just find yourself to the sign of voting now, what were you thinking before about your ancestors? There's people that look like you that died so you can vote. That means nothing to a lot of us. It means nothing, in my opinion. It means absolutely nothing. So when you say now his age, I'm voting for the first time, that's what I see and that's what I hear. You know, you had no connection. It didn't bother you that they gave up their lives or whatever they had to do so you can vote. No, it didn't bother you because, no, they didn't dribble a basketball and make millions of dollars. But it doesn't have to be because sports people in general. I said this a few years ago when I realized in the state of Georgia there was 650,000 black people in the state of Georgia alone that's not registered to vote. And I'm going to tell you, realistically, if Obama didn't bring you out to register, well, God got to walk the face of the earth to bring you to register? Seriously, if you weren't moved to vote for him, then what's going to do it? Really, what's going to do it? And I'll say this, the 46 million, it was no thing behind the 46 million that chose not to vote 4 years ago. That was 46 million that just didn't give a damn. No one told them or slicked them out and told them not to vote. People in this country are tired of what's going on, and they did that as a form of protest, those millions. So it wasn't like they decided or he decided, I'm going to have these people stay home. You had two idiots running for president, Hillary Clinton and him. And instead of just basically vote for either or, they chose to stay home. But here again, when it comes to us, a lot of us, we had disassociated ourselves from our past. We act like the civil rights movement never happened. Because you know what? We live high on the east side now. We act like it's so long ago and it's not important to us. So when I hear Shaquille O'Neal say, I'm voting for the first time, I don't even care. That's how I feel. I don't care, you big dummy. Your response, Mr. Charles.
Yeah, I do care, though, because there's people that's listening to him, and he's supposed to be representing some things. So I do give a damn. It pisses me the hell off. I said that to y'all. I said this to you guys before on our show. It was a problem with me when Kaepernick said he didn't vote either. That's a damn problem for me. And I think he started to come around to understand how important it was. He was for the right thing, but I don't think he really got it. But I think he started to really see when things started to continue to develop. That is the problem for me. So you want to be out here saying you're doing all this and that, you're going for the right reasons or whatever you're standing for. But, man, if you miss a vote, people dying to vote so we can have the rights for certain things, you miss that? But you want me to follow you? Hell no. Nah. Kaepernick did put a lot of work in to get better, in my opinion. Come a long way full circle. But if Shaquille O'Neal saying that, particularly with what he had to understand with supposedly his stepfather taught him and those things, that just went right out the window. Because he getting, as you said, he's making his money, doing what he's doing, and it's like, I got mine, get yours.
Here we go, man. There's a big disassociation from people that came in front of us. Big. It's like a cutoff. It really is, man. It's like a cutoff that we just don't, a lot of us don't go back and feel like we owe them anything. We don't. We live a life like we owe nothing to them. Nothing. Because we never met them. We never talked to them. So it's like we don't owe nothing. I can't speak for other races, but I speak on our race, and I don't see this in a lot of other races. They pay tribute and honor to the folks that came before them. We're one race of people that just don't do it uniformly. I'm not saying none of us do it. But as a whole, we can care less, man. Your response, Stephen Reese.
Yeah, it made me wish he hadn't said anything about it and just went on his merry way and started doing this, because there's no excuse. And it's interesting how certain media outlets put certain black folks in influential positions, and we find out that, you know, they're just selling out for the money, basically selling out their people for the money. I hear him and Charles every week when they're on TV, their political views and what they say and all this other stuff. But these folks ain't for you. They may look like you, but they ain't for you. And so it's a real big disappointment to see him and others, because Charles is right. People follow them. They are influencers, and people follow them. People love them. People buy their products, all that other stuff. But when you find out that the people who talk the talk ain't walking the walk, it's a big disappointment. Not that I follow them, but there are younger people who look at them and different celebrities, and their word matters to them. And for you to be negligent on that end, and this is not the first time, you know, him and Charles have been negligent on a few issues, but for them to be negligent on this, it just makes you wonder. It just really makes you wonder, you know. I know it doesn't make me wonder anymore, but it makes, I'm just saying it as a figure of speech, it makes people wonder, you know, who are these people really speaking for when these issues come up and they ask them their opinions? Who are they really speaking for, themselves or the people that look like them?
Well, they're speaking in a way to please masses that don't look like them. That's what happens, bro. We know that. You don't think Charles, for the most part, speaks to maintain, you know, them liking him, Charles Barkley? Same thing with Shaq. A lot of things they say, even LeBron for that matter. LeBron, I honestly believe LeBron sits back. He has people to sit back and kind of tell him, okay, this is okay to sit here, because it would kind of basically be popish, meaning that the majority will find it okay, it's safe. Give me a time when they come out and say something that's not safe. But I got a question I want to throw back at you too, Mr. Charles. I'm going to come to you first, Demarius, this one. And, you know, you say, you know, people buy or whatever the case may be. How do we hold them accountable? That's the question I have. How do we hold them accountable? What can we do when they aren't doing the right things or showing they're not connected? How can we hold them accountable?
Stop buying their products and stop supporting them and stop buying the products that they're all the Shaq, Papa John's Pizza, the General's Insurance, all the Icy Hot stuff. I mean, you gotta use your dollar. You gotta use your power of the dollar. Say, you know what? Since he's going along with this and I don't agree with this, I'm not, and you got to make it known. You got to make it known that I'm not supporting this because this person is part of this. It was the same way why the Washington football team right now decided, after all those years with the owner defiant not to change anything, when the money starts talking, that's when people start saying, you know what, I got to change something up or we don't get paid. So it comes down, the bottom line comes to cutting off the support, cutting off the dollars, and that's how you get folks to listen.
I'll say this to Washington. I think that came out, the name change came out of the Black Lives Movement, bro. Because for years, he was defiant, and black people, and everybody kept showing up. They just kept showing up. I think now, with the Black Lives Movement, they got caught up in that, and NFL kind of leaned on them a little bit more. It's just my personal opinion. Mr. Charles, how do we hold them accountable?
Well, I think, as you said, it can happen with holding back the dollars, but also can happen by coming together as groups and as the masses. Because I think that when you mentioned about the Washington football team changing their name, that started with the masses, with the Black Lives Matter, but even more the masses, because that started to affect the companies that spend their money. And when it starts coming to their attention, then they tell the owner, like, look, you want to continue to be a sponsor, you got to change this. So it starts with the masses. Nothing. You have enough people that make enough of noise to say, hey, when you talk about Breonna Taylor, you really don't know what the hell you're talking about, blah, 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 instead of just one voice, then it gives them reason to think about it. Maybe they might brush it off, but at least they know people are paying attention. So you either might want to be careful what you're saying if you don't give a damn that school too, or you might just be quiet, as DeMarie said, because people are watching.
I just think that we get lost. I'm not saying us three. But I think we get lost when people have, you know, they reach their status of celebrityism, whatever you want to call it, and they reach the money that they have, that we tend to not hold them accountable, and we tend to focus on, you know, them making it and what they do more so than being accountable. And I'll come back to you with this, Mr. Charles, because I remember, you know, this cat came out. And before things really picked up, Jay-Z came out and said, we no longer have to kneel. Let's play it out. And I remember the room he was in when he said it. Charlamagne was there. He ain't say a word. I'm pretty sure he didn't come on the air and say nothing. But he'll find people that can't touch him. He'll call them donkeys of the day and everything else. But my point is, why aren't it that the people that have, you know, the possibility to say something and challenge don't say anything?
They don't want to ruffle the apple cart. They don't want to mess it up. So what they do is they go along with it, and it's okay. And as you mentioned, we as people, we go along with it too. But see, the problem with this is, for me, and maybe as you said, we all have different experiences. When people make money or they have the same stature, doesn't mean they can't make mistakes or they can be wrong as hell, and we shouldn't hold them accountable. And me being around enough athletes or whatever, having a cousin that played in the league for 15 years, you know, all of that, had the Bentley and all that stuff too, you realize they make mistakes too. And once you see one damn Bentley, you've seen it all. But so many other of us are caught up in these materialistic things and how much they made it. I mean, my thing too is, you're a musician. What the hell you know about politics? You're Michael Jordan. Who should I vote for? What do you know? Seriously, we need to start realizing where our sources of information should come from and our priorities, and then holding people accountable and say things that really are off the wall because they are in a position. And together as masses, we can make a difference. Black Lives Matter happened. They like kept saying for years, saying, oh, they ain't going to do nothing. They ain't going to play nothing. All of a sudden, it took off. Look where we are now. I'm just saying.
Mr. DeMaurice, why does it seem like the folks, Charlamagne and others, find it hard to hold these people accountable and speak out on some of the folks they really should be speaking out on?
Because they want to be part of the in crowd, man, or the so-called in crowd, the crowd that's making the money, the crowd that's influential as celebrities. They want to be part of that crowd. They want those interviews. They want to be close to those folks that are what they deem as movers and shakers, until they find out that they are on the wrong side of history, and then they try to double back or act like they didn't say anything or act like they were down for the cause from the beginning. But they just want to be part of that particular group, that elite group, that they think is so great and so powerful that they dare not say anything wrong because that person, whoever that person they're looking up to, will cut them off, won't talk to them, won't give them interviews, won't have anything to do with them. And that really kind of affects their bottom line also.
Yeah, two good responses, gentlemen. We got a little time left. We're going to go light a little bit. And, ooh, what a day, what a day, what a day, what a day. I'll come to you first, Mr. Charles. With anything that kind of stood out for you today?
Well, the sadness of Dak Prescott and his injury, really sad, because don't know, but looks like he's going to be out for a while. That was really sad. The Miami Dolphins, man, I knew at some point they would get hot. Today was their day. They woke up today and played real well, and I was happy for them because I think they're going to be a decent team. But those two things, and it's just more or less that I'd say that all teams in the NFL realize that now you need to be ready because anything is possible. Anything can happen, any injury or anything can fall off the, you know, the wheels can fall off the wagon. You have to be ready.
I'm sure Dee Maurice, even despite what happened today, you got a COVID story for us, but what comes pertaining to the NFL? What anything that stood out for you today?
Not today, but Thursday night with Tom Brady. He still got that arm strength, but you know, old man time, old father time is undefeated, bro. When you can't remember what down it is, it may be time to quit. When you can, everybody else knew what down it was, but you didn't know. You didn't look at the markers. Come on, come on. Belichick must have knew something. He must have knew something.
It's interesting.
CTE,
baby. I remember,
CTE.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago, his wife was saying he suffered a lot of concussions, and they rushed to set that up quite a bit. It makes you kind of wonder. It does make you wonder a little bit that, wow. I'm gonna piggyback on Mr. Charles said with Dak Prescott, man, because I think you saw in a roundabout way the coldness of the NFL today with Dak Prescott. And the Cowboys set this up a while ago when they signed the backup quarterback and gave him $7 million. And he came in today and played, from what I understand, not too bad. And Dak Prescott wheeled out. And one player you wheeled out, he's crying. You go in the locker room, and they don't even remember you anymore, bro. If they don't even remember you no more. They're going to move on. It's like, and I'm sad for him on a couple of levels because he wanted more money and turned down $100 million guaranteed, not thinking of the possibility this could happen. Now, if this happened with that guarantee, his money is his money. But I just don't see this turning out well for him. I just don't. Especially if they start to win, beating the Giants is no big task, granted. But if they start to go on a winning streak, you got to remember, that's how Tony Romo got pushed out. And the Cowboys' ownership loved Tony Romo. If they weren't standing behind Romo with an injury, if they're going to stand behind Dak, I seriously doubt it. Gentlemen, we'll get together soon. We'll do this again. I appreciate you, too, doing what you're doing. It's with Black Men Talk, Mr. DeMaurice, Mark Elliott, Mr. Charles. Y'all have a good week.